The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, William Bendix stars on an episode of The Life of Riley from 1945, and J. Edgar Hoover is the guest on Bill Stern's Sports Newsreel. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, J. Edgar Hoover is the guest on Bill Stern's Sports Newsreel. Right now, William Bendix stars on The Life of Riley, originally broadcast on January 28, 1945, as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Folks, during the day, he plays in movies like Wake Island and The Bell for Adano. But in his off hours, he's a gentleman farmer.
Yeah, yeah. And on my farm, I got the smartest little hen you ever saw. This hen lays an egg every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But on Friday, she lays 3 eggs. She likes the weekend off.
The American Meat Institute presents William Bendix in The Life of Riley. The meat people of America, providing a great food for a great nation. 5 million farmers and ranchers raising fine meat animals. 600,000 men and women in more than 3,500 meat packing plants. 400,000 meat retailers, all doing their level best to fill your daily needs. On behalf of all these, the American Meat Institute brings you The Life of Riley. Well, if peace and quiet ever reign in war worker Chester A. Riley's little California bungalow, leave it to Riley to change the status quo. And right now, something seems to be brewing as we find Riley, his wife Peg, and daughter Babs holding a family council in the kitchen.
Now, let's get down to the naked facts. 2 weeks ago, I came home from work and I hand you four $5 bills.
Yes, yes, we know that.
And I say to you, Dumplin', here's $20. Go out and buy yourself a new mink fur piece. Because the rabbit in your old mink fur piece is getting bald.
Oh. Yes, Daddy, I remember seeing you give Mother the money.
Okay. When I gave you the dough, Peg, what did you do with it?
I told you I put it away in the cupboard here in the cream jug.
Cream jug? You mean the half and half jug. We ain't tasted cream in 2 years. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. You say you didn't look in the cream jug again until this morning?
Yes, yes, and there are only three $5 bills.
So $5 is missing.
Daddy, are you sure you gave Mother $20? That's right, I didn't count it. I just took your word for it.
I'm positive I gave you $20. Four $5 bills. You know me. I never forget a face.
What's that got to do with the money?
Well, Abraham Lincoln's face was on every one of the four bills.
Well, where did the $5 get to?
Now, let's use logic. You didn't take it, Peg. Babs didn't take it. I didn't take it. I got it. A burglar took it.
Oh, don't be silly, Riley. If a burglar did it, why didn't he take all the money?
Well, maybe he figured it would put him in a higher income tax bracket.
Daddy, burglars don't pay income tax.
They don't? They can go to jail for it. Oh, yes. I see what you mean. Now, let's get logical, Peg. We didn't take it. A burglar didn't take it. Your Uncle Baxter is back east. Hey, maybe Junior took it.
Oh, Riley. Why, Junior wouldn't steal. You know that.
Of course not.
I ain't saying Junior stole it. He probably just took it when we weren't looking. And forgot to tell us about it. Hi, Junior. How's my favorite son, huh?
Okay, Pop.
Junior, look, did you borrow $5 from the cream jug?
Me? Well, no, Pop.
That's funny. I wish I knew where that $5 went to. I like to know what happens to all our income and outgo so I can balance my books.
You don't keep books, Pop.
Well, sure I do, mentally. And if there's $5 missing, I'm mentally unbalanced. You're sure you didn't take it, huh?
Well, honest, Pop, I wouldn't steal.
No, of course you wouldn't. I'm talking crazy. Why, us Rileys ain't got a crooked bone in our heads. Figured I even mentioned the matter, huh?
Okay, Pop, see you later.
Okay. Well, Junior, wait a minute. What's that you got in that box there?
Well, this?
Yeah.
Oh, just a basketball. Oh, see you later.
Oh, wait a minute. A basketball? Let me get a feel of that, huh? Boy, I ain't had one of these in my hands since I played for good old NYU.
NYU?
Huh?
Pop, you never went to college.
Oh, this NYU was the New York Upholsterers. We played in the Industrial League. Oh, boy, this reminds me of the old days. I used to dribble the ball right down the floor, fast as a pussycat. Dribble Puss Rally, they called me.
Oh, yeah, I bet you were good, Pop. Can I have the ball now?
Hey, this is a pretty good basketball. Brand new, too. Where'd you get it?
Well, it's from a club's game tonight. Give me the ball, Pop. You might bust it.
Look, it's still got the price tag on it.
Price tag?
Yeah. Says $4.95. That's almost $5. Junior, where did you get $5 to buy a new basketball? Huh?
Well, I can't tell you, Pop, but...
Junior, you took it from the cream jug. Junior!
No, I didn't.
Look at you. I can see guilty written all over your face. G-I-L-T-Y.
No, Pop.
How could you do a thing like this? Stealing from your own family. Didn't I give you the right kind of upbringing? Didn't we always sneak into the theater to see them crime don't pay movies? And this is how you repay me.
Oh, Papa, I didn't take the money.
I'm ashamed of you, Junior. To think that on Christmas I thought enough of you to give you my ruby ring that's been in my family for 100 years. But you don't deserve to wear it.
Papa, will you listen to
me? I don't want to hear no more. Now, go to your room and stay there.
Look, Pop, whatever you decide to do with me, you...
Never mind that. I've already decided what to do with you as soon as I talk it over with your mother.
Oh, Riley, I just can't believe Junior'd steal.
Neither can I, Peg, but the evidence is as plain as my face. Peg, there's only one thing to do. I'm going to give Junior a licking.
A licking? Oh, but Riley, Junior's a big boy now.
No, don't worry. I can protect myself. That boy needs a good old-fashioned shellacking, and he's going to get it.
Oh, now, Riley, look, you're just a little excited.
Now, Peg, no arguments. I know how to bring up my son.
Well, he's my boy as much as yours.
Oh, okay, I'll only lick my half.
Look, Riley, you don't want to do something you'll be sorry for. Couldn't you just give him a good talking to? After all, it was only $5.
Only $5. Yesterday it was cookies. Today it's $5. Tomorrow it's Fort Knox. Don't you see, Peg, this has got to be snipped in the bud.
Well, I suppose you're right.
I'm glad you see it my way.
Riley, what are you doing?
I'm taking my belt off.
Oh, you think it's best to do it with a belt?
It's the only way.
Oh, but Riley, a belt.
Oh, I know. I feel the same way. When I think that just a few years ago he was just a little baby, and now... Oh, this is one of the worst features of being a parent. But duty is duty, and no matter how unpleasant it is, it's got to be done.
Oh, I guess you're right.
Okay, here's the belt. Go and do it.
Me? Oh, no, Riley. No, not me.
No, Peg. This is no time to get soft-hearted. You got to be strong. You lick him. I'll cook the dinner.
Well, why can't you be strong? It was all your idea anyway. You're the one who's getting soft-hearted.
No, it ain't that, Peg. I just couldn't use my belt on him because...
Because what?
Well, who'll hold up my pants?
Well, I'm certainly not going to do it.
Okay, give me the belt. I started this and I'll see it through to the end. Well, Junior, I'm giving you your last chance. Are you ready to confess you took the $5?
I didn't take it.
Okay, that settles it. You're getting a licking. Bend over.
All right.
Wait a minute. I'm giving you your last chance. Are you going to confess?
No.
Okay, that settles it. No more talk. Bend over.
I'm bending over.
Wait a minute. I'm giving you your last chance. Did you take the money? Come on, Junior. Cooperate.
I told you I didn't.
Okay, that settles it. I ain't the type that shilly-shallies. This is the end. Come on, end over. I mean, bend over.
All right, get it over with.
Don't tell me what to do. You've got to be taught a lesson. Well, I might as well get it over with. Why don't you say something?
What do you want me to say?
Anything, Sonny, as long as you make me mad.
I've got nothing to say.
Trying to braze it out, huh? Okay, you better hold on to something because this is going to hurt, Junior. Okay, here it comes. And let that be a lesson to you.
Is that all, Pop?
Well, don't think I'm getting soft-hearted. The reason I stopped is it's on account of the war effort. The government wants us to conserve clothing, and if I gave you the licking you deserve, I'd wear out the seat of your pants. So I'm postponing your licking until the war's over.
That's okay with me.
But I'm still going to punish you. You ain't playing in the basketball game tonight.
Oh, no, Papa. I gotta play tonight. It's for the championship.
You heard me. No basketball tonight, and no more basketball this season.
But, Pop...
You're gonna spend your spare time working and earning enough money to pay back the $5 you took.
Oh, I'll do anything you say, Pop, but please let me play tonight, please. Just tonight.
No. It's time you learned that people have to pay for the mistakes they make. And if I ever catch you doing a thing like this again, you and me are through. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it. And don't ever let me catch you smoking.
In a moment, we'll find out more of the mystery of why Junior took the $5. Or did he? Right now, this is Ken Niles speaking for meat. On all sides these days, we're hearing this question. Where's the meat? Well, all kinds of meat, including the choicer cuts, such as steaks, roasts, and chops, are going to the armed forces, including established Army and Navy bases, to military rest homes, to training centers, to Army and Navy hospitals, and on to ships and submarines with refrigeration facilities. Now, against a slightly decreased all-over meat supply, the government has the greatest meat needs in history, nearly one-third of our total meat supply. Tonight, I'm going to try to analyze the current situation here at home. Perhaps when you think of meat, you think in terms of steaks, roasts, and chops. Did you ever realize that even in peace times, there never were enough of these choice cuts to go around? But where are these cuts going? Well, you know that the men right at the fighting front get most of their meat in the form of compact, easily transported rations, which do not require refrigeration. But they do get their meat, and lots of it, and they get it regularly. Yes, millions of tons of meat are going to our fighters on five continents, on seven seas. It's plain arithmetic. When war needs go up, the amount of meat left for civilians goes down. The War Food Administration estimates that there will be 127 pounds of meat per civilian this year, as against 143 pounds in 1944. That's less for us, but it will keep up the supply for the boys at war, and that is the number one job of your meat industry. All meat, regardless of kind or cut, is a yardstick of protein foods because meat measures up to every protein need. And now back to the life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Well, Riley is still convinced that Junior stole $5 from the cream jug and is determined to punish the boy by not allowing him to play in the championship basketball game tonight.
But, Daddy, couldn't you let him play just tonight?
No. I said no basketball for Junior until he pays back the $5.
I know, but he could start his punishment tomorrow. Let him play tonight. The game means so much to him.
He's got to be taught a lesson, Babs. You'll understand better what I'm doing when you become a father. I mean, when you... No.
Oh, but Riley, isn't it enough that you gave him a whipping?
Whippings are all right in their place, but you also got to impress the boy's mind.
Poor Junior. He made a date to take his girlfriend, Marilyn Morris, to watch him play. Now I guess he'll have to stand her up.
If she's the right kind of girl, she'll wait for him until he gets through paying his debt to society.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Riley, stop talking as if Junior was a criminal.
Well, that's what he practically is. No wonder he was so brokenhearted when Shaky got frozen stiff.
Now, look,
wait a minute,
Riley, don't you think you're being...
Junior, is that you at the front door?
Yeah, it's me.
Come in here.
What do you want?
I thought I told you you can't play basketball tonight.
Well, I'm not going to play basketball. I'm going out to see if I can get a job, like you said. To pay back the money.
Oh. Okay, if it's for a job, you can go. Junior?
Yeah?
Be careful how you cross the street.
Don't worry, I'll be careful.
Who's that at the door, Junior?
Oh, it's Mr. O'Dell, the undertaker.
Well, tell him to come in.
I am in. Greetings, Riley.
How are you, Digger? How's with the undertaker, huh?
How do you do, Mrs. Riley?
Hello, Mr. O'Dell.
Babs?
Hello?
You're all looking fine. Very natural.
Thank you. Will you excuse us, Mr. O'Dell? Well, come on, Babs. We better do the dishes, dear, if we're going to the movies tonight.
Movies. That's all the ladies think about.
I'm very fond of the cinema myself. Riley, did you happen to see a film called Arsenic and Old Lace?
Well, no, dear.
Don't miss it. It's about two old ladies who poison 12 men and bury them in the cellar. I sat through it twice. It was awfully gay.
It must have been. Well, what brings you here, Digger?
Oh, I've come to cheer you up in your hour of need. Riley, why didn't you tell me?
Well, tell you what, Digger?
That you had to pawn this valuable ruby ring.
Digger, my family ring. Where did you get it?
In Tubbin's pawn shop. I knew you wouldn't part with this ring unless you were destitute. Why didn't you tell me you were heading for the poorhouse? I'd have given you a helping hand.
I didn't pawn this ring. I gave it to Junior. He pawned it. That kid, if it ain't one thing, it's another.
Yes, boys can be very annoying. They annoy me constantly. Lately, half a dozen young hoodlums have disturbed me at my work by gathering in the doorway of my place of business and chanting a song.
Well, why should that bother you?
They always sing, "Don't fence me in." Well, Riley, I am glad to see that you're not flat on your back. Financially, that is. Well, I must be running along.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for everything, Digger. I'm a little short of cash right now. I'll pay you what I owe you for the ring tomorrow.
Oh, it's only $5. Take your time, Riley. Digby O'Dell is always glad to carry his friends. Here you go.
Peg. Peg! Come here, quick!
Yes, what's the matter, Riley?
Peg, look at this.
Oh, it's your ruby ring. The one you gave Junior.
Yeah. And how does he show his ungratitude? By hawking it in the pawn shop.
Oh, no.
First he steals a $5 bill. But he couldn't hawk that. So now he's pawning the family jewels. He's disgraced us.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, Riley. I can't get over it. Pawning the family ring for $5. He ain't even smart. When I was a boy, I used to get 7 for... I mean...
wait a minute. Junior got $5 for this ring.
Yeah?
Well, there's something funny about all this. The basketball cost $5, and he got $5 for the ring. Then why do you have to take $5 from the cream... Riley, are you sure you gave me 4 $5 bills?
Oh, sure, I'm sure.
Well, maybe you lost a bill or dropped it on the floor or mislaid it...
Peg, I remember perfect. Why, I was wearing the suit I got on now. I had the 4 $5 bills in the little watch pocket so I wouldn't lose them. I remember giving it to you. I put 2 fingers in my little pocket like this, and I pulled the money out like...
What's that you took out of your pocket?
Nothing.
Don't say nothing. I saw something green. Now, what is it?
That's a piece of lettuce. I couldn't finish my lunch.
Let me see that, Riley. It's a $5 bill. So you did have it all the time, and you accused Junior of being...
Peg. There's a lot of $5 bills. The mint is having a big year. They're making a lot of money.
Riley, that's the $5 bill you accused Junior of stealing, and you might just as well admit it.
Yeah. I guess it is. What a revolting development this is.
I said he didn't take it, but you wouldn't listen. Oh, no, you had to go ahead and call him a thief and ruin his basketball game.
I'm a failure as a father.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
I'm a problem parent. Peg, do you think he'll ever forgive me?
You better do something, and right away, too.
Yeah. Junior, darling.
He's not here. You made him go and get a job to pay back money he didn't take.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I gotta find him. Oh, maybe that's him now. Oh, it's you, Marilyn. Well, come in.
I want to speak to you, Mr. Riley.
Who is it, Riley?
Oh, it's Marilyn Morris, Junior's little friend.
Junior's fiancé.
Junior's fiancé. Excuse me, Marilyn, but isn't it a little late for a 12-year-old girl to be out?
12 and a half.
Pardon me, madam.
Well, hello there, Marilyn. Was anything wrong?
Plenty. Mr. Riley, after what you did to Junior, I think you're the meanest man in the world.
Well, I...
Accusing your own son of being a thief and stopping him from playing basketball.
And giving him a beating, besides.
What? You mean to say he beat Junior?
With a leather belt.
Mrs. Riley, I don't see how you can live with this man.
Oh, Mary. You shouldn't say things like that about Mr. Riley.
I have a right to criticize as his future daughter-in-law.
You sound more like a mother-in-law.
Anyway, we know now that Junior's innocent.
Yeah, but he didn't have to pawn the family ring.
Oh, but you don't understand. He had to pawn the ring, otherwise his club would have called him a thief.
What? Nobody's gonna call my boy a thief.
Just a minute, Marilyn. What's all this about Junior's club?
Well, Junior's treasure, and he lost the $5 that the club saved up to buy a basketball. So he pawned the ring.
Well, why didn't he tell me about it?
Well, he knew how much the ring meant to you, and he didn't want to hurt your feelings.
Oh, I see.
You see the kind of a son you have, Riley?
Gee, how can I ever make it up to him? I got to do something nice. I know, I'm going to buy him a new lawnmower. But all this wouldn't have happened if he'd come to me for the $5 in the first place.
Well, that's what he should have done. But Junior isn't always as bright as he should be.
He's a lot like his father.
Yeah, he's my boy, all right.
Well, he may improve.
Oh, gosh, I'm glad it's all settled.
Oh, but it isn't. You're forgetting about Junior. He can't play in the game tonight. You made him take a job.
Well, he can quit, can't he? The game ain't started yet. Where's Junior working?
120 Magnolia Avenue. He's got a hard job, too.
Never mind. He ain't going to do it. Marilyn, you go down to the gym and tell the coach Junior's playing tonight.
Okay.
We'll go and get Junior and have him down at the gym in less than a jiffy. Come on, Peg.
I'm ready.
Wait a minute. I almost forgot. Where's my belt?
Well, what do you want with your belt?
I'm going to give it to Junior.
What?
I'm going to give it to Junior and then I'll bend over. $120. Here's the place, Peg. It's a funny place for Junior to work, a private house. He's too young to be a butler. Junior.
Oh, Mom, Pop, I'd have brought home the $5. You didn't have to come for it.
No, Junior, you don't understand. Everything is okay.
But what do you
know all about everything, and I ain't sore about you pawning the ring, and you're playing basketball tonight, and will you take me back as your father?
Oh, gee, Pop, sure, but...
Come on, Junior, dear, you'll miss the game.
But I can't leave my job.
You go to the game. Whatever you're doing, I'll do it for you.
You will? Gosh, thanks, Pop.
Well, hurry up, Junior.
Oh, so long, Pop.
So long, Junior. So long, Peg. Have a go. Oh, hey, wait a minute. What am I supposed to be doing here?
That's it, Pop.
But that's a baby.
Yeah, I got a job minding the Reese's baby. They went to the basketball game.
But I can't mind this baby. This ain't my type of work. I'm a riveter. Peg, you mind the baby.
I'm going to the basketball game.
Good.
Come on, Junior, dear.
So long,
Pop. Junior, Peg, don't. Peg. Pipe down, you. I'm not talking to you. Dog.
The Rileys will be back in just a moment. I hope the red stamp situation won't make you women feel you have to give up those good meat breakfasts we've been talking about. For a good meal to start off the day, let's say you'd like to serve each member of your family of four a slice or two of bacon with the breakfast eggs. You can do it with only a quarter of a pound or one ration point. If you want to serve some good nutritious liver with it, watch for pork or lamb liver, which requires no points. Or liver sausage, which is delicious when served hot at breakfast. That's point-free, too. And how about that good old English dish, grilled kidneys, that rate close to liver in proteins, minerals, and vitamins? That won't take any of your precious points either. Though you see, there's more than one way to keep the proteins of meat in your breakfasts. All meat is rich in the right kind of proteins. Right for growth, right for tissue repair, right for good red blood. That's why meat is a yardstick of protein foods, because meat measures up to every protein need. And remember, these nutritional statements just made about meat are accepted by the Council on Foods and Nutrition of the American Medical Association. And now, here's a word from the star of our show, Riley himself, William Bendix.
Folks, there's a war on. No, I don't mean the one that the Germans and Japs started and that the United Nations are going to finish. I mean the war against infantile paralysis, the deadly enemy of your child and mine. So, let's all join the March of Dimes. Send your dimes and your dollars, if you can, to President Roosevelt. Remember, a dime that you send marching may help a little child to walk.
Follow the Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, and presented by the American Meat Institute next week at this same time. Next week, Riley goes to a lodge initiation, and the results are black, blue, and disastrous. This is Ken Dial saying, see you next week.
This is the Blue Network.
I can settle down and be doing just fine till I hear an old freight rolling down the line. Then I hurry straight home and pack. And if I did, I believe I'd blow my stack. I love you, baby, but you gotta understand, when the Lord made me, he made a rambling man. Some folks might say that I'm no good, that I wouldn't settle down if I could. But when that open road starts to call in me, there's something over the hill that I gotta see. Sometimes it's hard, but you gotta understand, when the Lord made me, he made a rambling man. I love to see the time a passing by, and to ride these rails neath God's blue sky. Let me travel this land from the mountains to the sea, 'cause that's the life I believe he meant. And when I'm gone and at my grave you stand, just say God's called home, you rambling man.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Hank Williams and Ramblin' Man from 1951. We also heard William Bendix on The Life of Riley, first broadcast on radio on January 28, 1945. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, J. Edgar Hoover is the guest on Bill Stern's Sports Newsreel. But first, here's Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys featuring vocalist Tommy Duncan with the Twin Guitar Special from 1941. As WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Sports Newsreel.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, is on the air. Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, with stories rare. Take his advice and you'll look clean. You'll get a shave that's smooth and clean. You'll be a Colgate Brushless fan.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bill Stern speaking from Washington, D.C., and bringing you the 239th edition of the Colgate Sports Newsreel. We've come to Washington tonight to interview our special guest, Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI. But first, Reel One. Portrait of Mother's Day. On Sunday, the day after tomorrow, the nation will celebrate Mother's Day. All over the nation next Sunday, sons and daughters will honor their mothers on this day. For some mothers, though, this coming Sunday will be a sad day. For their boys are far away this year, in either the Army or the Navy. I know of one mother whose son is now in the Navy. She may not hear from him on Sunday, but he'll be thinking of her. Maybe he'll also be thinking of another Mother's Day 5 years ago when he and his mother were the principal characters in a strange sports story. With Mother's Day coming up this Sunday, it's appropriate that we tell this story tonight. I said it was a sports story, and it is. For you see, it's about Bobby Feller. Do you know who Bobby Feller is? Well, if you don't, Bobby Feller was perhaps the greatest baseball pitcher developed in the last 20 years. I say was because Bobby Feller's in the Navy now. However, before he joined the Navy, Bobby was the star pitcher of the Cleveland Indians. He was voted the most valuable player in the American League. His pitching record is one of the greatest of all times. But our story starts 5 years ago on Mother's Day, when Bobby Feller's team was playing in Chicago. Bobby Feller had already decided that the nicest present he could give his mother on Mother's Day was to bring her from her home in Iowa so that they could be together on that day. Hence our story really starts early on the morning of Mother's Day, 1939, when Bobby Feller greeted his mother as she arrived in Chicago. They were both very excited. For Bobby, it meant his mother'd be close to him on this Mother's Day. For Mrs. Feller, it was her first chance to see her famous son in action. Young Bobby Feller took his mother to the ballpark, seated her in the grandstand, left her with a kiss, put on his baseball uniform, warmed up, and then began to pitch. Every pitch brought a thrill to the former Iowa farm boy. But wasn't his mother watching his every move? Mrs. Feller's heart swelled with pride. What a Mother's Day present this had been. Here she was watching thousands upon thousands pay homage to her son. She sat spellbound as the early innings wore away. On all sides of her, people were talking about her son. She wanted to stand up and proudly shout, "That's my boy, my son!" But she remained inconspicuous, just one among a vast throng of 40,000 people. Then it happened. Bobby Feller wound up, let go a burning fastball. The Chicago batter swung. The ball hit the bat, not squarely, but just enough to deflect the terrific speed of the ball towards that packed grandstand. Women screamed, men ducked as the ball came rocketing into the stands. But out of all the assembled thousands, it struck only one person, a quiet, kindly lady who tried to remain inconspicuous among those thousands. That ball struck Mrs. Feller. The ball pitched by Bobby Feller had struck down his own mother. Hit her in the head, dropped her like a bullet. You can imagine how Bobby Feller must have felt. He was at his mother's side in a second. He carried her tenderly to a first aid station, saw her taken to a hospital, prayed and prayed hard that no injury would result, and none did. And only when word came that Mrs. Feller was going to be all right, did Bobby Feller return to that game and go on pitching. That night, a somber-faced youngster sat staring into space. His mother was talking. "Bobby, you must forget this. I'm all right." Shortly afterwards, Mrs. Feller went back to Iowa, and the story of the most unusual Mother's Day celebration was ended. This coming Sunday will once again be another Mother's Day. Bobby Feller's now at sea in the Navy. His mother's in Iowa. And yet I'm sure on this coming Sunday they'll both be thinking of another day. Another day 5 years ago, when a baseball thrown by the famous Bobby Feller struck only one person out of 40,000 people watching a ball game, and that one person was his own mother. And it happened on Mother's Day. Reel two. Off the screen, Flash Gordon, the great water champ, is Buster Crabb. About the time that the other babies were learning to crawl, Buster Crabb was learning the Australian crawl. This great Olympic swimmer held 16 world championships. You see, cutting speed records is a lifetime habit with Buster Crabb. So naturally, he's a booster for Colgate Brushless Shave Cream.
You're right, Bill. And men, here's what Buster Crabb writes. "I just spread on that Colgate Brushless straight from the jar. No wasting time rubbing, soaking, or brushing. I pick up minutes right there. And then, once over lightly with my razor, and I'm on the last lap. Finally, I duck my face and razor, and I'm under the tape for a fast, smooth, easy, comfortable shave every time. A real championship shave. Thanks a million, Bill, for putting me in the swim with Colgate Brushless."
You hear that, men? Colgate Brushless Shave Cream can help solve your stubble trouble, too, because it's made for you fellas with tough whiskers and tender skin. The second you smooth this light, fluffy cream on your face, it gets to work. Softens your beard right down to the skin line so your razor can skim the smooth surface clean and close without snagging or pulling. Let me tell you, my fellow shavers, Colgate Brushless is no quitter. It stays moist and active, clear through your shave, leaves your face clean and smooth, your skin mighty comfortable. I wish you'd prove this. Yeah, go ahead. Try Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. If you don't say it gives you a clean, cool, comfortable shave every time, send the top of the carton to me, Bill Stern, and I'll see that you get double your money back. Get Colgate Brushless Shave Cream and get it tonight. Reel three. Colgate's camera close-up of J. Edgar Hoover. Tonight we've moved the whole show to Washington, D.C., to interview one of the most famous men in America, the man whose job it is to track down spies and gangsters. And here he is in person, the famous head of the FBI, Mr. J. Edgar Hoover.
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, sir. What sports do you like the best?
I've always been interested in baseball and boxing, basketball and wrestling.
I know that you are an ardent sports fan, but tell me, Mr. Hoover, do you encourage the members of your FBI to take part in sports?
Indeed I do, Bill. We have a Federal Bureau of Investigation Recreational Association just for that purpose. We have a pretty fair softball team, too.
You mean, Mr. Hoover, that the members of the FBI have a ball team?
Not one ball team, Bill, but about 40 ball teams. They play their games at night and on Sunday mornings.
That's amazing. Do the members of your Federal Bureau of Investigation make up any other athletic teams?
Certainly. Last winter, we had about 12 basketball teams just from our organization.
Mighty good, Mr. Hoover, mighty good. Now, tell me, what other sports do your FBI men and women take part in?
Well, we're very proud of our organization's bowling record.
You mean that you still have time for bowling along with investigating everything the FBI has to investigate?
Yes, we do, Bill. Last winter, we had 12 bowling teams with over 1,000 bowlers, all from the FBI. And we still have time for all of our investigations.
Well, sir, if you're looking for the best shave cream, just investigate Colgate. Seriously, though, keep up the great work of the FBI. It was a real pleasure tonight to bring this show to Washington to interview you. Thank you so much. Good luck and good night, J. Edgar Hoover.
Good night, Bill.
Good night, sir. Reel 4. Profile of a bike race. This is the story of a bicycle race. The strangest ever held. It was a bicycle race that took place more than half a century ago, but it left behind a mystery that still haunts the sports world. Shortly before the turn of the century, bicycle racing was one of the most popular sports in America. Hence, on July the 12th, 1890, a tremendous crowd gathered at Colchester, Connecticut, to see the National Bicycle Championship races. 38 of the most famous bike riders in America started in that race. It was a bitter and a furious battle, with three bike riders staying out in front from the beginning to the end. As these three pounded into the stretch, the crowd roared its approval, everyone waiting to see which one of the three would win. Closer and closer, the three bike riders came to that finish line, and then it was all over. All three bike riders had gone over that finish line side by side. The race was officially declared to be a triple tie for first place. It was an amazing finish to the race. Never before had two, let alone three, bike riders tied for the championship of the United States. The papers were full of it, and so all three men, Paul Heller, John Simons, and Red Dowell, were all duly declared on July the 12th, 1890, to be the co-holders of the Bicycle Championship of America. That 12th of July, 1890, went down into sports history. The passing of time might have dimmed that date if something strange hadn't happened the very next year. For the very next year, on July the 12th, the first anniversary of that date, Paul Heller, one of the three bike riders who tied for that championship, was found dead. It seemed extremely strange. Not only had three bike riders tied for the championship on a certain date, but on that very same date, one year later, one of those three had been found dead. Another year rolled by, and then, strange as it seems, once again on the 12th of July, another one of the three bike riders, John Simons this time, was also found dead. Now the papers did make a big story out of it. It seemed incredible. Three men should race to a triple tie on the 12th of July, and then two of these men should die on succeeding 12th of July. Everyone watched to see what would happen to the third man on the next 12th of July, but nothing did. In fact, nothing happened to him until 7 years later, when he too was found in bed, dead. And he too had died on the 12th of July, the anniversary of that triple tie. The public demanded an investigation after this, but nothing much came of it. And so this fantastic mystery was never solved. That is, it was never solved until one day 3 weeks ago when an old man died in Argentina. His name was George Matisa, and he left behind him a strange farewell note. It read, 54 years ago, three men tied for the bicycle championship of the United States. They finished in a straight line, all three going over that finish line together. But that was no mere coincidence. They did that to keep me from winning. They knew by finishing that way, I couldn't get around them, nor could I go through them. I hated them for that. And so I took my revenge by poisoning all three on succeeding 12th of July, the anniversaries of the date of that race. Signed, George Matisa. Well, that's the story. As soon as we heard it, we began checking into dusty old records to see what there was to it. We found the three men did tie for the bicycle championship of the United States on July the 12th, 1890. And each one of the three was found dead on succeeding 12th of July. We also found that there was a bike rider in that race named George Matisa, and that he did come in second, and that years later the same George Matisa had sailed for Argentina, and that was the last heard of him until this confession turned up. Does this confession explain why three men tied for the bicycle championship of the United States? Does it explain why they all died on anniversaries of that date? Does it finally solve the mystery? Frankly, I don't know. What do you think? Real Five, Bill Rippey.
So you think your face is different? You think your whiskers are tougher than the next guy's, and you can't imagine anyone with a skin as sensitive as yours? Well, millions of men are that way. But here's how they make their face behave through a shave. They use Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. It's made especially for men with wiry whiskers and sensitive skin. A few strokes with your razor and your face comes clean, without snagging or pulling, at no after irritation. And you'll be happy to hear Colgate Brushless isn't greasy or gooey. It rinses off your skin and razor easily. Why not treat your face to a championship shave tomorrow? Get a generous jar of Colgate Brushless Shave Cream tonight. Now back to Bill Stern.
Real Six, our Colgate Candid Camera Catches, the story behind the story. Exclusive, Hollywood, California. Late this afternoon, exactly 3 hours ago, the lovely Hollywood movie star Miss Linda Darnell landed overseas. She will entertain our troops not by singing or dancing, but rather Linda Darnell is carrying with her complete newsreel pictures of last year's Rose Bowl football game. New York City, New York. Pat DeCicco, husband of Gloria Vanderbilt, who was in his fourth nightclub brawl this past week, might do less fighting in the night spots and more fighting in the right spots. And that's the 3-0 mark. Tonight we've been broadcasting from the city of Washington. Next Friday night we'll be back, same time, same stations, with another Colgate Sports newsreel. Our guest next Friday evening will be that great star whose band is heard nightly over this network, Mr. Fred Waring. Be sure and be with us at our usual time next Friday night when we present as our guest one of the most famous orchestra leaders in the world, Fred Waring. See you then. And until then, I'll be seeing you on the screen in the News of the Day newsreel at your favorite Lowe's or Associated Theaters. Now until the same time next Friday night, this is Bill Stern saying good night from Washington.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, is on his way. Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, had lots to say. He told you tales of sports heroes, the inside dope he really knows. So listen in next Friday night. C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
This program originated in Washington, D.C.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Bill Stern Sports Newsreel featuring his guest, J. Edgar Hoover. We also heard Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys featuring vocalist Tommy Duncan with Twin Guitar Special from 1941. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.